streaming live. And we have a public hearing that I will ask the clerk.
The town board of the town of Catskill will hold a public hearing to hear comment and concern regarding local law 5 of 2019, amending chapter 151, no parking, on Tuesday, September 3rd, 2019 at 6:30 p.m. at Catskill Town Hall, 439 Main Street, Catskill, New York, 12414, by order of the Catskill Town Board, Elizabeth Izzo, town clerk.
Does anybody want to remind us what our...
It's Brooks Lane in front of the Country Club.
And Mossy Hill Road.
Mossy Hill in front of the Camping Resort and Maple Ave.
Maple Street.
Smith's Landing.
Smith's Landing.
Yeah, they're not supposed to park them 50 feet in the direction.
Exactly. But. So these were all at the requests of either our planning board or residents. And if they were residents, they were conducted with the petition and all the appropriate process. Is there anyone here that would like to comment on the proposed signs? We're not anticipating any. All of them had been well vetted during the public hearings. Hearing no comment. Any comment from the board?
Nope.
Just that the highway superintendent uses discretion to put as the least amount of signs up that he can, because I feel like our town is now getting parking signs.
I agree.
Yep. So,
motion to adjourn the public hearing.
Motion to adjourn the public hearing from Jared.
Second.
Second from Paul. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is carried. Public hearing is adjourned. We'll instruct the clerk. No, we're not going to instruct the clerk. We're going to go into our regular meeting, and then we're going to vote. My apologies. Okay. So this will commence the beginning of our regular first Tuesday of the month meeting. Agenda on our website. We have some guests who will be under new business, but we will quickly go through our minutes and a review of our correspondence. Minutes to be accepted, the town board monthly meeting on the 6th, and the town board committee meeting on the 21st.
Motion
from Patrick.
Second.
Second from Jared. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is carried. Minutes are accepted. Correspondence. We got a letter from the Association of Towns. Our membership dues are due. We are a certain size town, and as a result of the size that we are, our dues are $1,200. So that is part of our budget.
It's worth it.
It is worth it. It is worth it. Every time we make a call, it pays in dividends. So that's in our budget. We don't have to do anything with that.
No. Yeah.
Letter from the Kiskatom Fire Department regarding their annual fun drive and their annual chicken barbecue dinner, which is on September 15th. Notice of a public hearing from the Livingston Planning Board regarding Tarpon Towers on September 4th at 7 p.m. We were viewed as a neighbor, so we've been getting notices on these all along. I think it's a...
Can we see it?
It might be because they can see us.
They can see us.
150 feet above ground.
Yeah, I don't know if we want...
So it's required for them to send something to us. Go on the 4th at 7. Then. Okay. A letter of appreciation from Jolene Ward of Louisiana regarding assistance from the cemetery staff locating headstones. So hats off to our team. Is that you?
No, that was the cemetery.
The cemetery staff? Okay, great. Draft agreement for review from the Empire State Development for the Quality In Demo Restore 4 project. So we're going to start going through that process to get that loan money paid. And that is it. Part of it is a public hearing tomorrow morning at, is it 10?
Yes.
At 10 o'clock. It'll be here, and it'll be for public comment if anyone has any regarding the project plan that has been executed. What else we got? Public notice for 8-year review of the Farmland Protection Board Agricultural District number 124 by the Greene County Economic Development team. That's a courtesy notice to us. and there is an opportunity for public comment. I don't know if there's any, was there anything on there that told us when? Upcoming meeting dates. The board is on October 2nd at 7 p.m. at the Agroforestry Center over at the Cornell. And then the public information session is Thursday, October 10th at the same site. And we're going to post this. They prepare a report concerning the nature and status of farming and farm resources within the district, which are certainly important for us. So we will post that as appropriate. Can you let Elliot get a copy of that, too?
Sure.
And Sean. PERMA sent us an overview on educational classes. There are a variety of them online now between PERMA and NYMER and others to assist our employees. The Greene County Real Property Tax Service, 2019, the assessed evaluations for our budget planning purposes will come formally from the real property tax folks. So that'll help us moving forward on our plan for 2020. And then, with regret, we received a letter of resignation from Aaron Klaus, our dog control officer, effective December 31st, 2019.
I thought we told him we weren't
going to
accept it.
Mail that back.
Just send it back and tell him we're not going to let him have it. He was hired in December of 2009. It's been his go-to informal job. And he, in his 10 years, has brought over 200 dogs to the safety of shelter, reuniting a lot of them. So he wanted to thank all of us, and also former supervisor Peter Marcoux, also the late Robert Antonelli, and also Pat Walsh, Liz Izzo, and the many town employees past and present. So we wish him the best, but he will be missed. His recommendation is that we can go back to a single dog control officer. They were splitting time. His recommendation is our current dog control officer. So we'll go through that with the budget planning process.
We'll have to delete the line item
that we added. Or we could leave it if she ever wanted to do something similarly. You know, I don't know. We should talk, see what...
Good conversation.
It's on there for budget planning. Okay.
Thank you.
And that concludes our correspondence. So we do have new business, which is budget workshops. We don't get a copy of the formal...
Not until the first meeting in October.
The first October meeting in October, first. But that doesn't mean we can't.
I'll be here so fast.
Yeah. So do you want to do some workshops in September and take a look at what we have?
Yep.
Are there nights people can't work?
Friday nights are out. But I could bring the kids in and they can play some work starting.
Yeah. I don't think Friday would be our first choice.
The first Thursday of the month is not... Oh, we're talking September?
Yeah.
Okay. How about Wednesdays?
Wednesdays
are fine. I mean, we could use the 18th. You work till...
I work till Saturday.
Tuesdays?
That's good for me because I get out at 6.
Tuesdays for you, Dawn?
Yes, Tuesday should be fine. I was just trying to see.
Gotcha. So how about Tuesday the 17th?
Okay.
And Tuesday the 24th?
Perfect.
And that'll give us a feel for where we're at. And the budgets will all be in because I know Kirsten's getting them in now.
What time? When you get out at 6, so you're going to 6:30?
6:30, okay.
Well, the tentative budget won't be presented to the board until October 1st.
Yeah, I know, but we...
You want to do pre-workshop meetings.
We'll do pre-workshop meetings, yeah. That's what we did last year, I think, in September. That way, when we look at it, we have a pretty good understanding of what's going on.
I'm sorry,
did
you say 6 or 6:30?
6:30. Here.
On the 17th and 24th. Let's find out, is the zoning or planning?
Planning will be on the 17th.
So we'll go upstairs on the 17th, and we can stay down here on the 24th. And can you
let... I'm so sorry. No. It's vice versa.
The 24th.
It's 24th. They're here. I apologize.
Okay. Well, we can find a room. And can you let Kirsten know?
Yes.
Perfect. All right. Done. Do you want to schedule the ones for October also? Or do you want to just use the meetings?
We can do that on the 18th.
Okay. Proposal for our human resources for 2020, that budget or that contract has to expire in October. So I just wanted to bring to everybody's attention, they have redone the contract. It's the same as it was. I will circulate it to you. The price is the same. We get positive feedback from Kirsten, who does the majority of work with them. We have one individual from Coxsackie who serves us 4 hours a week. And then we can call at our request to bring in someone who does, like, union negotiations type of thing. So I will circulate this, but unless anybody has any questions or concerns, this would be our second year, I think.
Okay. If the price is the same, service is the same?
Price is the same. Service has been really top-notch. So, for instance, like our sexual harassment training. She went through all the amount of stuff that was online for us and told us what was the best, and then gave us an opportunity to check it out. Works very well with our health folks down in Poughkeepsie. I don't need a resolution at this point. It's contract services, so if you're all good, then I'll sign that before we go. Meals on Wheels, no change on that, other than there's the sexual harassment that's been required, the policy has been added to the agreement per the law and the attorney from the county. Price is the same. We had been making some thoughts about some changing some things, but none of the personnel has changed, so therefore I think this probably for at least next year remains the same. It's $1,200 a month that they pay us to be able to use the...
For the kitchen.
We've also, as a result of us advertising this, they had like 18 people for lunch the other day, which was really cool. So, if everybody's all right with that, I'll sign off.
Yep.
Done. Village Catskill leads Jefferson Heights Sewer was 13.9, I think, and it's...
Yeah, 13. Yeah, 9 or 4.
Yeah, and this one's 14.5. So there's a slight increase. Does anybody have any questions or concerns about what's been done or covered? It's been
lovely.
As long
as it's working.
Yeah, you know, we've had some first-time user error type things with grease and things, and Mike has done an extraordinary job of working the apartment owners through that issue, collaborating with Delaware Engineering. They have not had a call since they implemented some of the changes. So it appears to me to be a very good cooperative agreement, at least anybody has anything that they have heard that they want to add. Other than there'll be more pumps, right? Out in Leeds.
Great.
Or have we got everything is up?
Everything should be
everything's up.
Function,
okay.
Yeah.
Then I think we're good then. So if you're okay with that, this expires in... June or August? I can't.
No, I believe it's in September. I think it was, October.
Was it October, this one
yeah.
too? Okay. How come we have all these Octobers? That's interesting. Oh, I know, because that's when we finished. We went live in Jefferson Heights, yeah. So 14.5. It's going to be charged on a monthly basis, so Kirsten and Betsy work on that. No issues there. I'll send a copy out to everybody of the new one. I think it's just like the different...
I think you sent it to us.
I sent you the original, which was last year's.
I sent them all to you guys today.
Yeah, today.
Oh, today.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That probably was...
It was right around...
Pre-car.
Yeah.
Pre-car dying.
Pre-car.
Car death. Okay. I'm going to jump quickly to the continuing business, because I think we can knock these two off pretty quickly. We need to pass a resolution on the emergency purchase for our totaled ambulance. I think when last we met it was totaled.
Yes.
We were able to identify one that was available, quote, on the lot. So I just need someone to introduce a resolution for the purchase of an emergency ambulance.
Make a motion that we declare an emergency purchase for to replace an ambulance that was damaged in July. Mm-hmm.
And then deemed totaled by the...
And then deemed totaled 2 weeks ago by our insurance carrier.
I second that.
Motion by Patrick, second by Jared. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is carried.
Get it
out. Get it over from Syracuse as quickly as possible, please.
I think it's the end of this month, beginning of October, will happen.
Okay. Okay. And he has the funds to take care of the bells
the
and whistles.
The extra will come out of his operating budget, which I believe is like $15,000 difference.
I think it's
from what the insurance will give us.
It's the lettering and then it's the drug box and some other stuff. Okay. Excellent. And then, he's got three things.
Yeah,
that's right.
At the end of the day.
He had three other items that he wanted us to touch base on for his. He's recommending for, and requesting our approval on the promotion of Brian Toomey from advanced EMT to paramedic and appointment to the vacant full-time paramedic position effective 9/1/19. Brian is currently approved to practice at the paramedic level by our medical director and is a long-time employee of the...
Second.
Any questions? You want to talk to him?
No, it's fine.
Have it come from to you guys?
Yeah.
Okay.
It came to everybody earlier today.
No, I believe the email was sent to...
Yeah, I think
it only got to
you
me.
And Patrick, Doreen, and myself.
All right. We've got... we have a departmental meeting on Thursday. Why don't we sit on this for a minute? And then you can reach out and have a conversation with him, you and Dawn. And let's forward this to the... so that you guys have an understanding of the process and his headcount and current vacancy, et cetera. So we'll just send him a note that says he should reach out to Dawn and Patrick.
Okay.
So we had the public hearing on the signs, and now we would like to pass a resolution for the adoption of local law number 5, the 5th of the year. Planning Board has issued special use permits for property located at 333 Mossy Hill Road and 27 Brooks Lane, which included no parking signs being erected along said property to allow for emergency vehicle access. And whereas the town board had received a petition from residents of Maple Street in the hamlet of Cementon for no overnight parking on said street to allow for the safety of the residents, and whereas the highway superintendent conferred with the requests and a public hearing was held this evening regarding those signs and streets, therefore the Catskill Town Board hereby adopt Local Law 5. I need a motion.
Motion.
Motion from Paul.
Second.
Second from Jared. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Local law is passed, and the town clerk will file the paperwork with the Secretary of State, which means this will take effect in 30 days. So why don't we let the folks that... Well, we'll let the planning board know that they were passed, and... I guess it's the residents at Maple Street, right? Okay. And we have two presentations tonight. The first is from both from companies that are in the process of applying through the planning board for approval on an initiative within our town. And the second one is Paul had some thoughts regarding how much solar we can use within our buildings. So you folks, we will talk to in a bit. But that's you two? Okay. Aaron Hazen was present at the planning board meeting last week. And Patrick and I were present along with members of the planning board who are here this evening, Ms. Golden, Chairman Izzo. And we asked her to start an educational process as they're going through the application process. Tonight is that. And then I also went to the town of Ulster and had some conversations with their community also. So we'll follow.
Thank you. And we appreciate
appreciate this opportunity to talk about our project. And we do intend to also host a community open house later this month as well for folks who are not able to attend these meetings, try and get more exposure to the project and education out there. So what we are proposing, and we've presented a full site application, and a full environmental assessment analysis form, and a special use permit for this project to the planning board. What we are proposing is a battery energy storage center or system, and this is the North Catskill Grid Support Center. What I'll talk about is what is the argument for storage, why are we doing this, who we are. I'm with Glidepath Power Solutions, and my name is Erin Mason. With me is Dave Young of Chase & Companies, and they are our engineering firm, helping us with all of our site plans, civil work planning, et cetera. I'll talk a little bit about how does it work, what's inside this facility, and then some project specifics. It's kind of technical. I'll go through it quickly, but please stop me with questions. So if I'm going too quickly, don't hesitate to say, hang on, I want to learn more about it. If your eyes are rolling back of your head, I'll just pick up on that and go faster. Okay, so let's talk about storage. It's important to understand the context of where it fits in. So New York's energy infrastructure is in a moment of dramatic transformation. So as part of the Green Deal that has been announced by the state and committed to by Governor Cuomo, New York will be raising its clean energy standards to 70% over the next 10 years or so. It will increase the distributed solar deployment to 6,000 megawatts. That's a big increase in deployment. And it will add 9,000 megawatts of offshore wind by 2035. Storage fits in there as an enabling technology. It's an important component of this infrastructure. So by 2025, this target is to install 1,500 megawatts and then 3,000 megawatts by 2030. So I say it's an enabling technology because, as we all know, the sun doesn't always shine, the wind doesn't always blow, and adding these intermittent or variable resource generation technologies can create some difficulty for grid operators. We have the tools to address it, but it adds challenges and complexity. Storage helps reduce the challenge, helps reduce the complexity that our grid operators will face. I'll go into how that works. The roadmap here is that storage, one of the key immediate benefits, aside from wind and solar helping that along, is it helps us use the efficient generation technologies more, or the existing generation technologies more efficiently. So during peak demand, non-hot summer days in the late afternoon, we all get home from work and fire up our dishwashers and our laundry, and all of a sudden demand on the grid peaks and skyrockets. And the grid struggles with that currently. Even with all the gas and coal that we've got, they have to ramp them up suddenly. And they have what's called a peaker plant, and I'll go into that in more detail. And these are really inefficient ways of supplying power to the grid. And what that does, think about it as you're driving a semi, all right, and you're at a red light, and you gun that semi just to go 100 feet to the next red light, and then you slam on the brakes. That's what's happening in the grid right now, and that's what we're trying to help improve. It will also create jobs in the state of New York, so up to 30,000 New Yorkers employed in this industry by 2030. It's supported by the major environmental groups. This is a team or a consortium of national environmental advocacy groups that have written a joint letter to the U.S. Congress encouraging Congress to support added incentives for storage. They see the value of energy storage on the grid, as I mentioned, in helping that transition to renewable energy. It also will spur, as they say, economic growth and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. A little bit about us. So I work for Glidepath. We are a fairly small company, but yet one of the leaders in U.S. development of storage. We have over 1 gigawatt of projects in our pipeline. We operate more than 400 megawatts of wind, solar, and storage throughout the U.S., also on the island of Guam. Our focus is on clean energy. We are, as I said, we're a small team, but deep in expertise. So we're all of us on the team have 10, 15, 20 years experience bringing in renewable energy, and we've come together to work on these problems. This is just a snapshot of our portfolios where we currently operate. And as I mentioned, we have a lot in development. We are working on projects in New York. We've got three others in the Central Hudson Valley that we are in the middle of permitting. Okay, now that we get into the wonky technical stuff a little bit. So here's where energy storage fits on the grid. It's directly tied into your distribution network. So it operates at medium voltage. It sits behind the lines between the transmission lines or distribution lines on your street going into your house. And we work directly, we communicate directly with the utilities. And it's done in an automated way. The facility is unmanned. We have operations and maintenance crews check on it, do routine maintenance. But all of the decisions made in the storage center are done through remote signals with the grid directly. So again, some of the benefits, just recapping, the energy storage helps support those variable wind and solar resources. It helps us avoid the use of peaker plants, which are among the worst actors we have on our grid right now in terms of emissions. And it reduces the need for new power plants, because that is key off of demand. So when we have those peak demands that I talked about, those hot summer days, that's a signal to the utility saying, oh, crap, I need another power plant. So if we can kind of shave that peak off with storage, it doesn't signal that need for a new power plant. So it's another benefit, not only environmental, but ratepayers. These power plants are expensive, so if we can avoid building more, it's to the good. All right, so why do we have peaker plants? I keep talking about them. Important to understand that the grid depends on supply and demand being matched exactly. So if there's not enough demand out there, and there's more power on the grid, you've got all those generators running, you've got to dial those generators back. Okay, you can't just have excess power hanging out there. Conversely, if you have more demand, if people want more electricity than what's on the grid, and there's no generation, that's where you start getting brownouts or even blackouts and cascading faults to the system. So these peaker plants are traditionally fossil fuel, usually gas, and they are the least efficient, the kind of worst in terms of emissions. And they have to sit there running 24/7 on idle, just in case they're needed. And then it takes about 10 minutes for them to ramp up, and they're doing it at as fast as they can. So again, it adds to that inefficiency. All that is wasted fuel and more gunk in our air. That's not the technical term. Okay, energy storage. Here's how energy storage helps. Here's how it helps replace those peaker plants. I talked about how we have over the course of the day in that upper left-hand corner, that looks like our demand curve in most places. You know, it's pretty low overnight, and then it peaks during the late afternoon, early evening hours. But if you look within a space of an hour or even a minute, it's really lumpy. You know, it's not just one solid line. You have these constant peaks and valleys. So this is just a representation of that. So you've got your actual electrical demand, and then let's pretend available power is a smooth line. In reality, that's also lumpy. So there are times where we have more demand. People need more power than what we have available. And during those times, the batteries are ready to discharge their energy onto the grid. So you're solving that problem of having too much demand without having to ramp up those peaker plants. And the benefit over peaker plants is batteries respond in microseconds. So within microseconds, they're throwing that power on the grid and easing the job of our grid operators, whereas peaker plant is going to take 10 minutes to get up to speed. And then conversely, you have periods where there's too much generation on the grid, not enough demand. An example where that can happen is as we increase wind and solar. Solar is blaring during the day when we're not using as much power, right? Most of our peaks in the late afternoon, right when the sun's going down. And also wind tends to blow at night, again, when wind demand is low. Batteries can absorb that nice, clean energy and save it for when we need it. So it's a way to increase the benefit of wind and solar by shifting, you kind of hold on to that clean energy and then discharge it when you need it. Okay, this is a typical look at what this project would look like during construction. This is a containerized approach. So we'll have the batteries housed in containers. They look like shipping containers, about the same size. And they'll be on concrete pads or piers, depending on what our soil analysis shows. They're grouped in sets, and each set will have an inverter there that converts it from the DC current to the AC current that's needed on the grid. About 9 months, maybe a year construction cycle. Shouldn't take too long to put this together. Mostly constrained by things like making sure we're not clearing trees or the wrong window to protect bats, and weather, of course. And we are committed to using local union labor wherever feasible, where it's not highly specialized that has to be done by, say, a manufacturer. We do have a memorandum of agreement with Hudson Valley Buildings and trades, construction trades, Menland. All right, here's what's inside those containers. The batteries are connected into packs. Each pack has an individual controller. And then those packs are assembled into a string. Okay, those strings make, they're constantly monitoring themselves. They're checking for voltage, state of charge, temperature, all the critical data that it needs to both respond to the utility. The utility and the grid says, hey, I need power. It's there. It knows exactly what to do. It responds in unison. As I mentioned, this is not man. These are not human decisions. We could never respond quickly enough in the way that these battery management systems can do. These sensors are also critical for safety. And I want to talk a lot about safety because I know that is a concern in the community. Here we go. Okay, so GlidePath is all about renewable energy. That means we take safety and the environment very seriously. It's our passion. We've selected this site because of our minimal footprint. We'll disturb less than 1/10 of an acre of wetlands. We've confirmed with SHPO that there are no, there will be no adverse effect to cultural or archaeological resources. Our environmental studies, led by change companies, have shown no significant natural communities that would be adversely affected as well. On the safety side, all of our systems have UPS backup in the events of loss of power. So both within our containers and our site, but also the interconnection facilities that connect us to the grid. Some of these fail-safe systems govern the HVAC and fire suppression. Those are critical concerns in any battery facility. The suppression system, the exact type, will depend on battery chemistry. They're very different. We kind of group everything by lithium ion, which is the type of battery, but that doesn't say exactly what kind of system. That will be done in finite engineering. We get our permits and we invest in all that engineering. Once those components are selected, the suppression systems and the specific chemistry of those will be governed by that selection. We have engaged battery and fire safety experts and also engaged with local fire departments. For example, in the town of Ulster, we've worked already, we have a project that's a little bit further along. And we've met several times with the fire department, and we continue to work on that here as well to get their input so that we've got a site that works for the local community, works with the equipment we have, and we will also be offering training. So not only initially, you know, before we start, but then ongoing regular training on site so that as there's turnover, your first responder crews, everyone knows that site and is well prepared. Energy storage is deployed around the world for more than a decade, and there are thousands of sites, and there are very few thermal events. So it is a very safe technology, and it's getting better and better. So today's energy storage systems are designed to UL standards that they prevent the propagation of fire between cells and packs, and that prevents the major fires. So it's all designed around safety, and those benefits, we're already getting those benefits versus older technologies or early installations. The things we worry about with batteries, here are some of the things and how we control for them. So batteries don't want to have mechanical damage, okay, that can cause internal shorts. Things like impacts or punctures or a shipping container dropped. So we want to know what's happened to that battery and that crate from the moment it leaves the factory. And we have tamper-proof sensors that look at tilt and shock and measure all of that. So even before it comes on our site, we know it's been handled with care. And anything that would have a sensor that says, oh, there's been a problem, we just kick that off and our supplier takes that back. Overcharging is a risk. So our phones, sometimes, you know, they don't have cheap electronics and may not have the right protections to keep them from being overcharged. And that is a risk that can damage some of the internal components. Here in energy storage systems, those monitors I talked about, those sensors are constantly looking for any sign of that and automatic shutoffs to prevent that from happening the second there's an indication that there's a problem. Overheating is an issue, so HVAC systems have to be designed really carefully for this system, and they have backup power. And the containers or any individual cell, if they begin to overheat, there are multi-stage detection and suppression systems in place so that you contain that one little area before it becomes a major incident where Cat's crew has to launch a major attack at it. And then short circuits is another issue that you want to carefully monitor for. Systems, the computer controls will monitor that, detect it, and immediately disconnect power. Any questions on the safety stuff so far? So I hear a lot of questions from just in general of, well, what about this? What about that? So I wanted to talk about a couple of them that we hear commonly, because sometimes that's something you may be thinking about as well. So if I'm saying batteries are safe, how come the airline tells me I can't put it in cargo hold? That's because they don't have all of those monitoring systems I just talked about. So they have no idea the condition of the battery in your phone or your laptop. They don't know if it's been dropped from the top of a roof before it goes in their hold. They don't have the monitoring systems or the suppression systems to react if there were a bad battery in there. So for those reasons, it's not that the batteries themselves are inherently unsafe, it's that they don't know if it's a damaged battery or not. So they say no. People think batteries will just explode. There's kind of horror stories out there on the internet, and that's simply not true. Water is actually one of the preferred suppression methods for lithium-ion systems. Okay, is this going to leach lithium into the ground? No. Lithium is not free metal in these systems. Lithium ions, the lithium is fully absorbed in that electrolyte solution it carries in, is carried by. It's in crystalline structure, so it's a lot like table salt. You have calcium, or rather chlorine, in table salt. It's captured in that crystal structure. It's completely safe. And then finally, what about toxic gas? Batteries do not pose unique or elevated risks to first responders or to others any more than a standard Class A household-type fire. Yes, there is off-gassing in the event of a fire, as with any fire. And studies have shown it's not from the batteries, not from the cells themselves, it's the surrounding combustibles. It's the conduit, the plastics, the power, electronics, the standard stuff that, don't get me wrong, fire smoke is bad, but this is not unique to these systems. All right, I'm going to wrap this up and then turn it over to Dave.
I have a question about safety.
Yes, sir.
Where is your local expert say an event does happen?
Mm-hmm.
Where is your guy going to site? Is he going to be involved in any of these? You're going to depend on our fire department, or are you going to have someone that's going to be a resource person, and how long is that person going to take to get on that site in the event of an event?
So that's a great question. So we will have local operations and maintenance contractors to be determined exactly the response time, but one of the reasons we are developing these projects in close proximity is for the efficiency of having someone who can respond in the area quickly. The sites will have clear communication protocols, both from at the perimeter with the enunciator box, but also key contacts with utilities and with the company. Our system includes 24/7 remote monitoring. So any time of the day or night, our experts are available monitoring the system, communicating with first responders. Does that answer your question?
So, it does, but I mean, I'm just worried about all this remote stuff, but God forbid something bad happens. Mm-hmm. When are we going to have somebody on the ground in Catskill to help our local firemen? Because I mean, you're dealing with electricity and some possible hazmat stuff as well. So
I understand, yeah. So there's automatic shutoffs, and the utility will be responding as they would to any major fire that involves. So a lot of those systems are in place. I do understand your concern, though. I'll get back to the better answer on exactly the response time.
So you're saying in a local case, Central Hudson would send their crews over there
mm-hmm.
to respond?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
As not to respond to something inside my fence, but to address the power supply. Yes. Question in the back.
Yeah. So for the remote monitoring communication, is there a redundancy with that? And what is used? Is it a cellular connection?
There's a number of different ways. Some sites can have even what's called a SCADA, a fiber optic connection, essentially. But cell, it just depends on the site as to what's best. So that's one of the things we would work with the local fire departments to understand what works here.
If communication is broken, what is the response time to resolve that?
I can't answer that until we know more about the design of the facility. But again, one thing that's important to understand is the site automatically, within a microsecond, is disconnected from the grid. So that, no matter what, that doesn't depend on a human making that decision. It cuts itself off. So I think I don't have a great answer for you as to the
No, you have actually answered it.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. As long as there's no one, you know, the car's not driving without a driver, you know.
Yeah. Coffee, you know?
Yeah. Just to touch on that real quick, if anything yes. were to happen at this site and we're notified, we can have in our pre-plans at 911 upon dispatch of Catskill Fire that they also notify their company to send a 10 down. So it would be a simultaneous dispatch, basically.
And so in terms of first responder training, what would be the interval for training on this technology for drugs and so forth? Like, how often would that be drugs?
It's whatever the local crew needs.
Yeah, for us, something like this, honestly, if this is on fire, we're not going in. We're going to worry about, you know, how far do we have to evacuate the nursing homes. I know somebody in the planning board brought that up. But with that, we'll contact our hazmat and Greene County Emergency Control to assist us with that, because that is a complete nightmare. I'm worried about
we did look into that, and Chase and myself just mapped that out. They are actually outside. It's a 500-meter radius, and they're outside it, not by much, but
we would probably put air control monitoring
absolutely
somewhere,
and that's a feature of our site. Yeah. There's constant air monitoring in the systems, and you know, the training is a great investment for us too, so there's no concern if we want to do it every 6 months.
One of the things I learned in going down to the town of Ulster, so I met with the town supervisor from the town of Ulster. They will have 4 of these, I think. They have the one in Ulster, and then is there other areas that are being looked at? I wasn't sure if I understood that correctly.
I think there's other companies.
Okay.
Following our lead.
All right. but the value of that is that I had the opportunity to speak to Haley Carlock from Cedic Hudson, Rebecca Martin from ConcernedCitizens.org out of Kingston, who all kind of followed this process that happened in the town of Ulster.
Yeah.
Very different beginning, because the original application, my understanding is, was a hybrid. It was
right.
a footprint with actual fossil fuel plus this exercise. And at the end of that, based on my discussion with the young lady from Scenic Hudson, was the fossil fuel piece was withdrawn.
Yes.
And so I've got the quotes that you had at the national level. She sent me all the quotes regarding Scenic Hudson, ConcernedCitizens.org, and several others, Catskill Mountain Keeper, all going like this because...
Yes.
And I think what we get to do here is, to get back to my original thought, we get to kind of follow or draft behind the dialogue that you have in the town of Ulster.
Yeah, it's an example. So initial market structure in terms of what NYSERDA and the grid operators were looking for favored that kind of approach, where it's not only just storage, but some generation at the site as well. Through that process, and this is how Glidepath operates, is you listen to the community, and that was not the right solution for that community. And so we adjusted. Right, so we found a new way to make this project, and it's similar to what we're doing here. It's just 20 megawatts, battery only, and we found a way to make that work in the market as well, so we're happy to move forward. You have to listen to the community, and if you can't make it fit, you either revise, or you work somewhere else. I mean, you can't just shove something in that doesn't work.
There is a solar project that's currently training people too out in Bogart, right?
Okay.
they're training the Kiskatum folks.
Yeah, there are people who are combining solar and batteries as well. So on site, we're locating that. So that's another approach to doing it.
I have a question. Yes. All the way back to the beginning, mm-hmm. you mentioned peaker plant. Where is one locally here?
Well, I don't have that. It doesn't have to be local. The way the grid works, it can be 100 miles distant mm-hmm. and still be responding to conditions here. So it's kind of like your plumbing system. It's all connected. So if you turn water on in one room of the house, it's responding throughout the entire house. The grid works like that as well, highly simplified. But yeah. So I don't know the closest one, but again, it doesn't have to be local to be affected by this or approved by this.
So 2 years ago, Central Hudson came to my house. We have Central Air. Uh-huh. And they put me on a program where during the summer, when my air conditioning is on, and it's happened several times this summer, they come in on their computer and they manage my temperature so that the grid doesn't overload.
Okay.
And, you know, several times this summer I see this little yellow light blinking and I'm set at 70, whatever, you know,
yeah.
At 78 or 79. But so this is like...
So storage certainly can help alleviate grid congestion, which is that demand management is a big piece for utilities, and it can be easy to be like, oh, Central Hudson, they're from the name, they want me to be overheated in my house, but demand management is critical to the grid because it does drive the need for new power plants, which can be just crazy expensive for all the ratepayers. So they're trying to prevent extra costs for the ratepayers. It's a little bit painful, though. Storage can help that because storage can help shave that peak in the same way that demand management is. So the more we deploy storage, now I can't commit that they're not going to shut your AC off, that's them, but the more storage is deployed on the grid, the less you have need for demand management that hurts the customer. So I mean, in general, that's how it works. But again, that's a policy and a regulatory question that I can't
mm-hmm.
dictate. But we're trying to create the conditions where it will be. Any other questions?
How many of these pods are going to be on that location?
Approximately 40 containers.
40?
How many inverters, I think? Eight?
No. There's 10. 10,
thank you. Sorry.
What's the noise that's going to be
a less than 60, which is the DEC recommended guidelines. So when we do the final layout and the equipment selection, we will also look at noise abatement technology, sound blankets, that kind of thing, to make sure that we are not impacting our neighbors.
That's for the inverters.
It's actually a combination. HVAC, transformers, and inverters are all point sources. Yeah.
Perfect.
So, yeah, it's definitely a concern. It's something we are looking at proactively to make sure we're good neighbors.
Well, the good thing about that location is it's not at the top of the
building. It's not. I guess one neighbor upset is too many, right? So I take your point, you're right, but we're trying to look at it as one neighbor is too many. So this is the overall location, and Dave will go into the site plan in more detail, and these are the existing conditions there. So it is, you know, it's a little scrubby. We'll hopefully improve that. We are looking at ways to preserve the rural character. That's a concern that was raised at the planning board meeting, and we do take that under consideration. So we're looking at fencing options, perhaps earthen berms, things like that, to try and improve and make sure the view shed from the road. We know you have a lot of people coming through 9W. Look at your beautiful town. We'll try and keep this as pretty as we can. Okay. With that, I'm going to. I just wanted to. I think I missed a slide. I don't think there's any new information on here, but just a summary of, you know, this is backed by environmental advocacy organizations. It's an improvement over. We're already having to balance the grid with peaker plants, and this is an improvement over that. It's the next generation. We hope to kick those peaker plants off the grid by enabling technology that helps wind and solar increases penetration in our grid. And this is an opportunity for Catskill to be part of that transformation. Catskill has this chance to really lead the way, and it's something that's being celebrated and really pushed from the top of the state on down, so it would be a neat opportunity we hope to share with you. Okay. That I know you know I'm taking a lot of time. I'm sorry, David, but Dave will go through the details of the site plan.
I'll just be real quick, and if you have any questions, please just let me know. Try and turn this a little bit so you folks back there can see it a little bit. This is a 10.9-acre site owned by Billy Bishop, and a majority of it is zoned highway commercial. You'll see a line right here that basically is about 500 feet off of 9W per your zoning map. The back portion is residential zone. So up in front, there's about 8.6 acres in total that are within HC zone, where something like this would be an acceptable use in that zone. What you see throughout here is an entrance drive off of 9W, which is down here. Route 23 is over here, the intersection down here, obviously. We come off of 9W with an entrance drive, and then split in two different directions just because of the way the site's laid out. Absolute Towing is basically in the middle of our site. We've got frontage over here on 9W and frontage here on 9W. One of the issues we've come up with is that this right-of-way is fee without access, which technically means you can't have a driveway access off of here, although there's one already there for this billboard. So I'm not sure exactly how that happened, but this section over here is fee with access. We can have our drive over here. There's a culvert there right now. We're actually looking at moving our drive over a little bit closer to Absolute Towing so that we wouldn't have to do that much of an improvement out on 9W. Probably just extend the existing culvert that's there and then have our drive come on out. As stated, you'll see there's pods of four containers in each pod, and there's 10 of these pods throughout the site, also called banks. So four of the containers go into an inverter and then into a transformer, and then they'll all come over to a CHD facility right at the front, so it can be sent across the road to the North Catskill substation on the other side of the road. Central Hudson, as a part of the agreement with GlidePath, has to accept power at this location and give the batteries power at this location. So it's their responsibility to come across the road. We will have to get a driveway permit for our access drive. And we're also looking at a possible emergency access drive over here, so it'll provide better access over to this side. Or else we're going to have to expand the drive that's behind Absolute Towing. Right now we're showing that as a 10-foot wide drive, which isn't good enough. We're showing 20-foot wide drives throughout the entire site, except for that location. We're waiting to find out what happens with that emergency access drive. If we can have it there, then we'll maintain this as 10 feet, just have emergency access over here. If not, we'll have to expand that back there with some retaining walls, etc. And a lot of the other things have already been covered. We did go through an archaeological study here, and we received clearance from SHPO that there's no impacts to any resources. We've gone through the threatened nature and rare species on the site and found that bats, just like everywhere around here, are the main concern. There are three wetlands on the site. We are going to be impacting one of them. We'll have to get a permit through the Corps of Engineers to disturb that acreage. It's going to be less than a tenth of an acre, so we won't have to provide mitigation elsewhere in the vicinity. And with that, I guess I'll wrap up. There is an existing garage here that's going to be removed, as well as a billboard. Then a couple other foundations over here and over here, and a small spring house that's up on the hill that was cleared to the archaeology, so it's not a major cultural resource. So that's pretty much it. It's a very compact site. There is a hillside off the back that is, drops off about 50 feet or so down to the lower areas down here. So we're all up close to the road. And this location is the primary concern where we're going to have to do some visual aspects there, provide some sort of screening, etc. Over here, there's actually another parcel that's in between here. That's about 100 feet from the edge of the road back to our parcel. We will take a look at that and see, you know, just what the existing vegetation is and if we would need to provide some screening there also. With that, if you have any questions.
So is that 40 for now and then adding later?
No.
Or is it 40
no.
And that's it?
There's no room.
Yeah, the way it is.
40 is pretty much maximum.
Well, the way the interconnection agreements work, you can't just add on, you know, you don't have to fix it, or you can go through the entire process again. There's no intention to go for
that. So you have made your first presentation to the planning board?
Correct.
One of the things that you had referenced, and I think we would be interested in hearing about, is some educational community gatherings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are happy to do that. We did some of those in Town of Ulster, and we'll repeat that here as well. So looking at the week of the 16th is Monday, so we'll look at midweek, schedule something, get that on the calendar. Oh, and I forgot to mention, we have a project website. So I will, if I can email it to you, if that goes on anything you want to publicize, there's a project website that is there for any questions that someone wants to contact us, or just submit a comment. Our website is set up for that. And we'll take those comments into account.
So you're thinking of a community gathering the week of?
Yeah, be either Tuesday or Wednesday, I think. So 17th or 18th is what we tentatively
looked at.
No, but I mean, do you want to do it on the night of our workshop?
Yeah, is that the night of our workshop?
Sure, we can take advantage of an existing slot.
Okay, fine. It's the same night as the
plan board,
isn't it?
No, the plan board is 24th.
So which day is that, the 18th?
17th. Tuesday.
Wednesday. Did we just schedule our budget workshop for
Tuesday.
Your budget's Tuesday. Your board is Wednesday.
But our workshop.
Yeah.
That's fine. Are we doing that at the Leeds Firehouse?
He hasn't gotten back in touch with me about the date.
That night.
Yeah. Say it again.
There's a conflicting meeting that night.
Okay.
In another town. I'll see if we can find a better spot.
So reach out to us when you guys have a couple of dates, all right? And then I would ask that you extend invitations to the local groups that you had worked with in terms of Scenic Hudson, Concerned Citizens, whomever.
Sure, we can develop a mailing list and send out postcards to the community.
Okay.
Nearby residents would receive a postcard.
And we'll, you know, send invites to our village college and things like that. Does that make sense?
I have one more question.
Yes.
So these batteries are in these pods,
containers.
Yes. The containers. So what happens when the batteries eventually die?
Yeah, it just goes. So it's a great question. Thank you. So they do degrade over time, and they have about a life cycle of probably roughly 10 years, and the project itself is expected to be 20 years or more. So there is a plan already built in the procurement of these batteries that the supplier takes them back. It's cradle to grave responsibility for recycling. So that's built into our contracts. And so it just depends on the time and what the best recycling option will be at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing that open. Okay, thank you all so much. I appreciate it.
I'm curious, what are your bullet points? Stated that this is us, Catskill, take the lead in the transformation to clean energy.
Mm-hmm.
Have you given this chance to the village of Bonsville or Chappaqua, Westchester County?
We have not worked in those areas yet.
Do you intend to?
I have to look at those specific areas. There's there's a lot of places. One thing that, New York's grid is designed in zones or divided into zones, and there's certain needs in zone. So right now we're looking at this zone. I have to look at those specific towns.
And and the lead in this zone doesn't necessarily help us.
Well, it
impacts, but it helps somebody in Manhattan.
So it's a counter question, and the reality is that it helps the whole grid. We all share that same air over New York State. So by kicking peaker plants offline, it does help all of us. And the other reality is that electrons go to the nearest need. So if you're turning your light switch on, the electrons out of the storage are likely flowing into your house nearby rather than bypassing down and going down to New York City. But you can't dictate where an electron goes. So it's all connected again.
Also,
just like plumbing in your house. You can't say, I want water to go to that bathroom. It's just all there.
The location of Central Hudson substation right there is ideal too, because
we're right across, directly.
Yeah.
We're 100 feet away from.
So a lot of areas may not have that ability for you to be so close.
No, it's an ideal site from that perspective. It doesn't really change that overall argument of where the electrons go. So I hear your point, but it's not really. That's not the. It's just kind of not how it works. It's without getting too wonky. Sorry.
How to follow up on a business plan? Obviously, you got competitors, so you got to be the right price before you take your energy from the batteries versus one in another location. Again, is there price points that you have to obviously compete with? Otherwise, they're not going to draw down on your battery. They're going to draw somebody else's.
Yeah, it works differently. So no, it's the services we provide, we're not out there just selling energy. What we're providing to the grid are what's called ancillary services. And your eyes are all going to roll back in your head right at this point. But so it's more of a set service that is cleared by the market, and anyone offering that service would be receiving that price if they were there available. So our goal is to be there available. How we get to be competitive is having our facility in the right spot and sure our batteries are available to provide the service.
So it's
just like someone with a solar panel gets a credit back from Central Hudson because they're not using Central Hudson's electricity. Kind of like that. You're filling the need.
We're filling a need.
Right.
Agree on that.
But you're on an exchange. You're on the equivalent of an exchange.
Yeah. So
so it's like a stock exchange type of exercise,
so
if you think of it.
Yeah. So energy is not. We're not trading directly with Central Hudson, for example. Energy in New York is traded on a market, on LISO. And so it's similar to a stock exchange in a way. If you want to buy shares in a company, you don't go to that company, you go buy them on the stock exchange. So energy is all traded through that exchange as well. And the ancillary services contracts, it really can get, I can send you white papers, if you want to dig deep into the topic. But I think the short answer is it's not a one bilateral contract with one utility. Kind of service to a market. And there are incentives as well.
Yeah. For anyone that's interested in digging a little deeper into this, NYSERDA has an extraordinary website that takes you all the way from technical assistance. So if you have a question about a battery, you send them an email, they'll call you the next day. They have that. And then they also have a 6-page eyes glaze over pricing document.
It's a common theme, sorry.
And it's a pricing document that kind of works you through the algorithm that they use. And there's about 6 or 7 was the ones that I saw. But there's more than that that talks to you about how this prices out. I think it's important. This is a taxable entity from a tax perspective.
Right. We are a taxable entity. We are not seeking a pilot for this project. We will be paying in taxes as any other business in Catskill.
And producing jobs.
It's an unmanned facility, so I want to be cautious on that and not overpromising. There will be construction jobs associated with this, 25 to 30 construction jobs during the course of construction. Much of that will be local. And there will be a regional operations maintenance contract company, but I can't commit that they're from Catskill. Typically that is. So the facility itself, I can't say, is a jobs creator for permanent jobs, other than O&M contracts, the services they provide.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll hear back from you in terms of a
yes.
gathering. Do you want to have that here, or do you want to put it up in the community center? So it'll probably be at the community center.
Okay.
And
the
just,
center.
I'm sorry, the senior center. And if you could give us a couple of dates other than, I guess, the 18th.
Yeah, possibly we can divide and conquer too, and send people to multiple places.
Okay.
So we'll try and make that work new. Since it does.
And then you'll tell us about providing you a list of potential invitees and the like. We'll do we'll do website and Facebook sharing for you.
And website for the project.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you. We'll set up a meeting sometime next week.
Yes. I'll be in town.
Okay. On to solar.
On to solar.
Oh, what about the I was looking for it.
No. I did an hour.
I printed out a few of these for you guys to share.
Oh, thank you. So, gentlemen, you are from Solar Generation in Kingston?
Correct. Yes, I'm the owner.
Hi.
How are
you? Jenner?
No, I'm Paul.
You're Jenner. You're Paul.
I always had a rule that if I forgot my business cards, I'd charge my employees $50. So I got to write myself a check for $50.
Oh, no.
I forgot my cards.
Well done. Well done. So this is regarding a proposal. Paul, you want to talk about how this started?
For rooftop on town hall, senior center, and highway garage. And maybe
ambulance. Yeah, we've kind of pivoted away to a different idea. Because we're in the process of building a big solar array in New Baltimore, we figured that would be a good course for you guys with like no money down to get into that and to draw the power directly from this local community solar array.
Are you guys familiar with the community solar stuff? I've been issued before. Yeah. So we're building a project up in New Baltimore. Almost a megawatt, 750 kilowatts. And what we can do is we can just take any meter, municipality meter, zero meter, square meter, and amalgamate enough of those to take all the power from the community solar project. And then what happens is it's sort of a back office kind of credit debit situation on Central Hudson along with ourselves. And quite frankly, we're looking for doing a couple of projects before the end of the year or confirm an anchor tenant. So we've got a couple of restaurants, a couple of radio stations is interested in one down at Sotheby's, and Jenner was talking to Paul, and I think it sort of may make some sense, the money from you guys, you get a 10% discount on power, and it's like 30-day commitment or something ridiculous like that, so it's sort of, it's of any interest, I think that's a formal proposal, but we thought we'd socialize it with you guys today. It's just up the road. In fact, it's not very far. I know we were just listening to it, which is kind of funny. But it's a small work. And then, by the way, it's a good project. I endorse that.
Thank you.
Whether you care, but I
right.
It's just a great music. So that's sort of what we're here to socialize with you, if you're of interest. I can send you a concrete proposal. The other approach, of course, is to put solar on every roof. And that would require, I think, an RFP with a proposal from the community folks and all the rest of it. And that's very difficult for a small company like myself to be for that wage on and stuff. So I would be able
Well, there'd be upfront cost for that for us, too.
Exactly.
Significant.
Yeah, so this is, the money. So I'm not so sure this requires an RFP process with you guys or is it a budgeting thing. I don't know. It's entirely up to you. Check this decision on how it's going to say, but. So exactly what Paul said, instead of going with rooftop solar, use the solar array, no cost to the town out of your pocket, you directly get a discount versus what you're paying Central Hudson. Now you've gone green, it's all clean energy, and we've got the whole array is ready for you, well, will be ready for you come end of October.
Yeah, and you can pick and choose any meter.
So any meter that we're currently paying a bill on.
Yeah, you guys sent me the whole list. It was 27 meters.
What do you call this? The sewer pump station.
So our sewer pumps?
Yeah.
Any meter?
Yep.
As long as it's within Central
Hudson. It's not a big deal.
And you don't see it.
Yeah, there you go.
You don't have to look at it.
Well, we have our buildings.
No, the power supply by Central Hudson.
That's all we
have. Any meter we have?
Is all centralized.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, we are in the process of, we've been approved for a grant from Clean, $35,000. It's NYSERDA again.
Okay, NYSERDA.
And we're going to swap our lights out from Central Hudson.
Okay.
That doesn't impact anything here.
Our street lights.
That I can think of.
No, anyway. That'll just lower your energy demand.
Exactly.
Which is great, which everyone needs to do.
Right. So this is all just moving in the same direction in terms of reducing demand and reducing dollars.
Yeah. So those are all meter too, right? The Central
no.
Hudson?
What?
No.
No.
That's a lighting district. That's,
yeah.
Those are lighting districts. So that wouldn't.
No.
So why don't I have. Why don't you give us a little time? Why don't we think this through, pull our bills with Kirsten, see how much money it is, and then see what else.
Another one,
sorry?
You don't want to build another one, do you?
What? Give me a permit.
We got a big old town dump that's just trying to be used for something.
No, it's actually not the permit. It's the grid itself is jammed up. It's a long time.
Yes.
Yeah. The challenge we have there too is we don't have three phase out there,
exactly.
And that killed us the last time.
Correct.
So.
That's why we talked about doing a roof mount.
Yeah.
Yeah. Behind the meter is great, but it's expensive and it's cash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As you guys pay, it's tax credits.
Right.
So do we.
Yeah, we're something to think
about. Have you put together
pull the data
proposal?
And why don't you put together a proposal and
absolutely.
We'll take a look at it. Thank you for coming. Thank you for sitting through our other presentation.
All that good information.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
you guys are
considering. A
you guys are from down in that area. Are you guys getting any feedback?
The shit show when they first went in on the glide path with the natural gas fired plant, and it was just like, no. But they, to their credit, they backed off. Okay, we'll just go. Just go back.
Okay.
The busiest town meeting I've ever seen. They're literally out the lines out the door.
Right.
Hit a nerve.
Well, it's kind of like watching another town down the road go through this. I think it's helpful for a process that now will be reviewing. So
seems like a small. What am I talking about?
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank
guys.
You both for coming.
Right, thank you so much.
All right. Any other questions? Any other public comment? Any other anything? If not, I will entertain a motion to adjourn. And we will second.
Are we taking this show on the road?